All right, so Graham, when we first came to you to ask you to take on what is ISIS, what does it stand for, what does it actually have to accomplish, how did you go about it? How did you get started on the reporting?
Well, the first thing I thought when you came to me was, am I going to have to go to Syria and Iraq to do this? And I was surprised to find as I looked around that not only if I went there would I probably not come back with a story or with my life, I would come back with a better story if I didn't go there. So the tactic that I took was to find out who are the people who have a voice, maybe not quite authoritative, but one to which other people were looking when they were trying to find out what the Islamic State stood for. And that took me to London and to Australia.
How did you find those guys in the first place, though?
There is this large community of ISIS supporters online, sometimes called the fanboys. And, you know, they have a kind of network that you can map out, see who follows whom, who repeats messages from whom. And there are a few of them who are particularly important as disseminators of ISIS ideology. And the guy in Australia was considered one of those. His name is Musa Cherantonio.
And did you find him at all resistant to sitting down and talking to you about ISIS?
He was definitely reluctant to talk because the Australian press viewed him as a kind of grotesque menace. And when I approached him, that wasn't what I wanted to hear him say. I didn't want him to support beheadings necessarily. I just wanted to find out exactly what he thought in great detail. So the things that he wanted to tell the world were the things that I wanted to listen to. This is a guy whose great passion in life is reading about history, about trying to figure out what the prophetic literature says, what's going to happen according to the prophecies that he thinks are true.
Did you find yourself wanting to argue with him?
You know, the arguments that I would be tempted to have with him were arguments I knew I would lose. You know, I'm not a scholar of Islamic law.
Right.
And some would say he's not either. But he definitely thinks about these things constantly. And he thinks about the obvious objections, including the objections that other Muslims offer to him. So it would have been silly for me to suggest that I could convince him that some other version of Islam is the one that he should follow or that Islam is wrong. But I could certainly sit there and ask him, you know, what exactly do you think? And why do you have these opinions that so many other people, so many other Muslims don't share?
And where does their confidence come from?
It comes from prophecy. In the case of this particular bit of correspondence, the guy more or less just said, what we're doing is preordained in texts that were written down 1,400 years ago. You will not be able to stop these things from happening.
What's your explanation for what pulls people into this group? I mean, we're seeing them successfully recruit consistently worldwide, pulling in kids from Scandinavia, from the American West. What is it that they go, why would they run to ISIS instead of running in the other direction?
One of the common types of sale that I have seen is a description of the kind of daily life of what it might be like to be in Birmingham or East London.
Yeah.
And saying, do you want that? Do you want to go to your fish and chip shop and watch a football game? And is that the most you're ever going to see out of life? Or do you want this incredibly meaning-rich environment where you're in an apocalyptic battle? This is something that contrasts so starkly with the kind of quotidian struggle of a working-class life, perhaps, in London, that I'm not surprised that it's appealing to people.
And so what was the response, if any, from members of ISIS to the piece?
So it was tweeted out. I've seen it tweeted out before, and there are quibbles with details, but I think in general, they saw the portrayal of ISIS in The Atlantic as one that they could recognize. They saw it as something that legitimately attempted to portray them in terms that they could see and say, yeah, that's more or less us.
I'm actually, you know, I'm curious how you, having published the piece and followed up now a couple times on the website, do you feel done with this subject and you never want to think about it again? Or do you feel like it's something you're going to return to journalistically?
I think I'll keep looking at this subject for quite a while. You know, it begins, this group, as an intensely ideological movement. And ideological movements, they tend to kind of routinize and give up elements and compromise. This group seems particularly resistant to compromise. Mm-hmm. And so as they're challenged and as they find ways in which it might be helpful for them to give up what they currently say are non-negotiable aspects of their platform, it'll be fascinating to see what compromise looks like with them, or if they stick to their guns to the very end and have a spectacular demise.